takes to make a shot at that range. Everything comes into play that far. Humidity, elevation, temperature, wind, spin drift. There's a 6 to 10 second flight time, so you have to shoot it where the target's going to be. Even the Coriolis effect, the spin of the earth, comes into play.
Marines, be advised. And I mean nasty and tired. I eat concertina wire and piss napalm. And I can put a round through a flea's ass at 200 meters.
870 yards in closing. Wind, 3/4 value, push 2 left.
How can you shoot women, children? Easy. You just don't need them so much.
This is my run, well, this is my gun. This is for fun, and this is for fun.
Hey everybody, Tyler here for the Sub MOA podcast. We appreciate you guys joining us for today's episode. Enjoy.
What is up, everybody? It is Sunday. I believe it is September 3rd. I'm not really sure. I'm lost in the days right now. It's the 6th already? Holy crap.
Just 3 days off.
I think, okay. Well, I mean, I've lost a few days over the past few as we did the Sniper Adventure Challenge. So you got myself, Tyler here, Vanessa.
Hi.
We're riding in a truck. We're driving back. We're in Wyoming right now, headed through Denver, off to Las Vegas. And I'm going to do my best to drive safely while we give a recap of the Sniper Adventure Challenge, kind of give everybody an idea of what the challenge is. Vanessa offers a very cool outsider perspective of what she saw and just a different view, right? I have my view as a competitor. She has her view as the person getting to see all the carnage, right?
The observer.
Now, there is a fly flying around inside the truck right now, and I'm curious if you think you can, for the next hour or so, refrain from trying to kill and end its life while we are discussing this show.
I'm gonna try, so it's been bugging me.
I would appreciate it.
Minutes, so I will do my best.
Okay.
To ignore the fly.
So to start off, the Sniper Adventure Challenge is put on by Competition Dynamics, and I've talked about this in the past. I know I did the match last year and there was an episode where we discussed it, but I feel like we could do a better analysis with this dual perspective that we have going on. It's essentially a 36-hour competition, and maybe give or take an hour here, an hour there, whatever. All right, but it typically starts on a Friday at 8 a.m. You will be lined up with your partner, and it will go through some of the rules and yada, 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 go over safety, all of this stuff. And then you're off, right? And then it ends on Saturday at 7 p.m. So you got roughly a day and a half of just falling out, trying to make it as far as you can, completing challenges, land navigation, shooting skills. I mean, they incorporate a lot of stuff into this. So we'll first start off with the gear, right? And for those of you out there who have not done anything like this, don't be afraid. Just get into it. You might not be successful your first time. I mean, we took second place this year. We're extremely happy about how we finished, but we did not complete the Sniper Adventure Challenge. The challenge is actually broken up into three mission format. So you get your first mission, you go out, you do whatever's involved in that, and then you get your second mission after you complete mission one, and then you complete mission two, you get your third one, right? Now you also have 24 challenges that are available in certain time blocks that you can complete. So just to give you an idea, to be a Sniper Adventure Challenge finisher, right? And there's very few finishers. For the past 3 years, zero people have finished the Sniper Adventure Challenge. So you have to complete all three missions, and you also have to complete 16 of the 24 challenges with a 50% or higher grade. So to give you an example, a shooting station is considered a challenge. Now, the way that this year's shooting station was configured, there was a total of 8 shots taken by the rifle shooter, 8 shots taken by the carbine shooter. So that's 16 total points. You must score an 8 or better for that to count as a challenge that would allow you to complete or finish the sniper challenge, right? And it is very difficult to do. Obviously, for the past 3 years, nobody has completed this damn thing, right? And that was kind of our whole mindset this year, was we didn't really care where we finished or how we placed. We just wanted to complete the challenge. And we finished.
But nobody came close to finishing.
Nobody came close this year to finishing. So my opinion, I almost feel like it was an uncompletable task.
I don't think anybody, there was only one team that started the third mission, and that was the last, within the last hour of the match.
So we completed mission 2, but we didn't get to do anything in mission 3. We ran out of time. Yeah. But the team that did, they only got 2 checkpoints. I think they got 2 checkpoints.
Maybe. I didn't think they were gone for long enough to have done, unless they did it before they came back down.
I could be wrong. I didn't really get to look at the scores too heavily.
Okay.
But I know that nobody came close to completing mission 3. So over a 36-hour period, we could only get through 2 missions. So it was rough. It was very challenging. So just to give you an idea about how things started for us.
Go back to gear, because we're talking about gear.
Well, I want to incorporate the gear into the beginning of how our planning started.
Okay.
So Fred and I did this last year, and then this year we learned from things that went wrong last year to improve, right, to get better. Our plan kind of remained the same as far as gear is concerned. We want it to be as light as possible. And from years past, if it's not on the required gear list, it's not coming with us. Which kind of bit us in the ass a little bit this year, right? Not in terms of completing a challenge, but slowed us down.
How many items do you think you wish you would have had that would have been worth adding to your pack? Just one, or are there a few that you would look back and consider for next year?
Well, looking back right now, I wish I would have had that damn trash bag.
Yes, 2 of them at least.
But that's the only thing I'm...
That's the only thing.
That's the only thing this year that I'm like, damn.
Yeah, because we talked about that.
Wish I had a fucking trash bag, right?
But nothing else over the 2 days?
No.
Okay.
No, nothing at all.
Brighter flashlight?
You know,
saved you $20.
So for anybody out there, okay, this match is unique, and you can bribe the challenge ROs, and if they accept your bribe, then it might help you.
And cash is king, so it's light.
Okay, ammo is also king.
But it's heavy.
You're carrying around ammo.
It's true.
And if you decide, you know what, I don't need this 20 rounds of 9mm, you can barter that to a stage
but
RO.
But you're also having to carry the ammo around with you. Are you carrying extra, or you're going to need that later?
You're giving ammo away, not knowing if you'll need it.
Okay.
It's a gamble.
Who doesn't want money? That's light.
Who doesn't want 9mm?
Oh, I'm just talking. We're talking weight in here.
But if we give ammo away, it makes us lighter.
It's
true. So
you're carrying it around, so you have to get rid of it.
So she says a brighter flashlight. We didn't bring a super bright flashlight. We had headlamps, and there was a stage at nighttime where you're looking at a target about 65 yards away, and the rifle shooter is trying to look at this target and identify little index cards with faces on it based on a description that your partner is getting from stage RO. Well, we didn't have a bright enough flashlight to see any detail of those targets. And it just so happened my good buddy Andy Reinhardt had a super bright flashlight and was willing to rent it to us for $20. So that was the only time we needed a super bright flashlight. So, do I wish I would have brought one? Yeah, $20 was worth it.
Crap.
So,
you're carrying it around, yeah.
It worked out, right? So, as far as gear is concerned, we wanted to be light as possible. And I think we succeeded because my pack was with rifle and everything. Now I wear a chest rig that I keep a magazine for pistol and a magazine for rifle on. I also keep my protractor, my mat pens, all of that stuff in there. And then I have a dump pouch that I attach to the front of me that I keep my map in. So it's quickly accessible, my compass, things like that. And then you have my pack, which has got my rifle strapped to it, all the required gear. So some of the stuff on the required gear list is like, you gotta have a trauma kit, chest seals, tourniquets, things like that, life-saving shit. Med kit, tweezers, which actually proved useful because when you step on a fucking cactus, right, and you're trying to get that shit out, like literally, Fred, we were coming down the mountain Friday night, Fred steps on a cactus and it's pretty bad.
Under his foot? Under into the sole of his shoe?
Into the side of his shoe. He thought he got them all out, put his shoe back on, and he's like, no, it's not. And he's shining the light, and he's like, they're in there. So I'm digging cactus out of my partner's foot with tweezers. So.
Oh, in his foot, not his shoe.
Out of his foot, yeah. So, ibuprofen, which, you know, there was a certain phase where I had stepped on a boulder, the boulder gave way, I fell, and then the boulder fucking rolled on top of me. You know, so for the next 24 hours, I was in some pain. My right ankle was bruised, my right knee was inflamed, and I was eating ibuprofen like it was cool.
And you never,
I don't,
never take
I hate taking any kind of drugs. Yeah. I hate taking any kind of non-natural stuff. So it helped having this required stuff. You know, if they would have inspected to see if we still had our medicine, I'd be like, I need it. But, you know, anyways, you got to have a tarp, a poncho, a signaling mirror, a strobe, you know, all of these things, a shovel, you know, these are all part of your required list. Outside of food and water, you don't want to carry anything extra, nothing. And, you know, I learned this a long time ago. Anytime you have a, you buy one of those really cool packs and they got all kinds of pockets.
Yeah.
You feel like you should put something in that pocket.
That's like a girl with a purse. If you have a big purse, you put more stuff in it. So the more space you have, you think you need to fill it. So
I don't have a lot of pockets on my pack. It's not even a tactical pack. It's a Osprey 24-liter pack, and it carries everything I need. I have my warming layers, my extra socks, and of course, everything is waterproof because you never know when you're going to go through water. Maybe it'll rain or whatever. You don't want the shit on the inside getting wet.
Yeah.
I took a lot of food, but it paid off because I was eating every hour. I mean, you and I talked a little bit, like kind of wondering how many calories we think we burned over this 36 hours. You know, I couldn't even put a number on it.
No.
You know, it was just a lot. But those little honey wafer things are so delicious.
You need small items that are packed with calories.
Yep. And then the little power shot blocks, little gummies that got caffeine and stuff in them. You know, Cliff Bars. I'm a huge Cliff Bar fan. So,
you know, caffeine and sodium are probably the two things you want to try to have in your snacks.
Yeah. Yeah, so I took a lot of food with me, enough to make sure I could eat every hour. And I wasn't just eating like one little wafer. I was eating a wafer and a Cliff Bar every hour. Like, there's a certain point where you're going to run out of energy if you're not feeding your body.
And you don't want to wait until it's too late.
Yeah. So every hour I was eating, and water was a huge one as well. I mean, you saw how many competitors were running out of water. Because there's certain areas, there's just no water sources. The creeks are dried up, and, you know, we'll get to that part later about how we sourced our water, because that was interesting.
I have questions about the water thing. If I was to ever consider doing this, like, can you train yourself for how much water your body will need to avoid getting into serious dehydration, and how do you plan that out when mind over matter when you're out of water for a while and you don't know when you're going to get more? So I saw teams that ran out of water and some did fine with it and others did not. So we can get to that when we talk about the water thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can, to an extent, train your body to operate off of limited. Maybe I've been doing that my whole life, I don't know. But so gear, you know, sticking with the gear subject, my rifle is built by DCC Arms out of Santa Ana, California. And this thing is a hammer. It's a carbon fiber barrel, 24 inches long, chambered in 6 Creedmoor. So it's kind of a laser beam, but man, that thing just hammers. And it's all titanium, so it's lightweight. And then I put it in the Falcor Defense lightweight hunting chassis. Carbon fiber buttstock, and then the loophole 3-18. Just enough magnification for us to do really, really awesome in all of the shooting stages. Like, we were the top shooting team. Wow, it's windy out here. Right, so we were the top shooting team, and I wanted to make sure the rifle would live up to what I needed it to do. So I didn't bring shitty ammo. I didn't bring a shitty rifle. You know, no hunting rifles, right?
So it's one rifle, one carbine.
One rifle, one carbine, and then a pistol for each of us. Okay. So I probably could have gone lighter on the pistol. I did bring a Glock 34, but, you know, going back, everything combined, everything. My pack and rifle and ammo and everything, food, water, you name it. We weighed it in the hotel that night, and both of us, it just seemed to work out that way. We're sitting at like 36 and a half pounds.
That's with water.
That's with water, yeah. So, I mean, if we didn't have the lightest packs out there, we were close.
Okay, the only other team I know had like the bare minimum was the team that won. Their packs, they barely looked like there was anything in it. So
okay.
I did see other teams that had some big packs in the beginning, and I was like, oh, that doesn't look good.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for me, tactical, heavy nylon, Cordura fabric is just not the way to go. Right, I've seen competitors, a lot of the average competitors' packs will come in the 50-pound range, and that's just too much.
I hiked Mount Whitney. That's the hardest thing I've ever done, and I hiked with a 41-pound pack, and that was a killer.
Yeah.
That's a lot of weight to carry around for hours.
So, one thing that we did bring extra of is each person brought water filter, water pump. And the whole reason we did that is we didn't want to burn time only using one pump for each of us, right? If we both have one, then we can both sit there and pump our water and save time. And time is huge, you know? So that's kind of how our gear was set up. You know, I was running a just regular old hiking pack, and I came up with a method of some Velcro straps and then a Fastex buckle on how to secure my rifle to my pack and not have to, you know, buy some crazy tactical pack to make it work.
And it didn't pull your pack down on your back?
Nope. You know, I got the pack fitted just the way that I want. The shoulder straps will adjust to my body height. It's got a very lightweight internal frame, so it's got structure to it, and, you know, it just works out really well. Fred ran the attack pack, which I do like that. I like it enough that I pulled one off the prize table. And this system keeps the pack close to the frame, and then it's got like 2 storage compartments that wrap over the rifle.
Yeah.
And it's super lightweight. They're not using heavy materials. It's really like endurance race or expedition style built. So it's a lightweight system, and, you know, it works well for Fred. He's got his whole setup and how he likes his stuff. So our gear was very critical. We had to think about weight and options that we would need, you know. So the gear part, I think we got that figured out. Next year, we might be able to find ways to go a little lighter, but I think that 30 to 35 pound range is probably the lightest you're going to be able to go. I just don't see it getting any lighter than that. If you go too light on the rifle, if you go with like a true hunting rifle where you have the thin barrel, you're going to sacrifice accuracy, because some of these strings of fire are 8 rounds. And the more heat you put through that barrel, the worse the accuracy is going to get with your hunting rigs. So you really got to play a fine line between your for your rifle setup. You know what I mean?
So I have a question.
Yeah.
There were only, how many shooting stages were there?
Shooting stages, there were four.
Okay, so the four were at the beginning of the first day. Are you required to carry your rifles knowing that there are no more shooting stages?
Yes. And here is two reasons why. First reason is you don't know what challenges are shooting stages.
Okay.
So there's 24 challenges, right?
So I've only been to this one, so I didn't know if in the past they have.
So just for everybody listening, the way this kind of works is in the beginning, you will get your mission card. Your mission card only has land navigation points and bonus land navigation points. You get a separate list of all of the challenges and their locations and times that you can access them, right?
In the beginning.
In the beginning. But you don't know what challenges are what. Now, you can kind of look at the map and see where the danger areas are, where they tell you not to go because people will be shooting there, right? So you can kind of figure out what challenges are shooting, but you are not required to hit challenges at a certain time, right? Just inside the window that those stations are open.
Yeah.
But it is not part of your mission card at all, right? So for some of us, for most of us, we all decided to do the shooting first. The team that won, if I remember correctly, they skipped the shooting. They did one shooting stage and left.
Because there were so many shooters that they knew it was going to take time?
I don't really know their thought behind it. Okay. I know one team chose to start land nav right in the beginning and not even go to any of the challenges. I don't know if it helped or hurt them,
yeah.
Right? But I know for Fred and I, right off the bat, we plotted all the points on our map for mission one, and then we looked at where the challenges were because we were dead set on hitting every single challenge. We were not going to leave any challenge unless we knew that it wasn't worth trying. And we could do that. You can skip a challenge,
yep.
And you know, you just won't get points for it. Not a big deal. But we knew that
you do the required number.
Yeah, if you want to finish, right? Some teams didn't do the required amount. They just did what they needed to do to get points, right? It really depends on what your mindset is for the competition. Are you competing to win? Or are you competing to finish? Because it's two different attacks. Two different strategies to achieve each one. So our plan, got all the points plotted, but then we looked at where are the challenges. Okay, all of these challenges are right here. So we hit challenge 1 through 4, all the shooting stations, bang, bang, bang. We went through, crushed the shooting, did really good on the shooting. Come over to challenge number 5, challenge 6, 7, 8, 9, and then number 5, right? Now, some of you are wondering, what are these challenges? Well,
from an outsider's perspective, they're so fun.
In the beginning, they're fun. As you get more tired, you're like, fuck, man, fuck. You want
Which
me to do
even
what?
Funner for us outsiders, because you're tired and you're watching these guys.
Right?
Go through fatigue and try to finish these challenges.
Yeah. So, to give you an idea, we actually hit challenge after 1 through 4, the shooting stations. Then we went over to challenge 6, which was you had to fireman's carry your buddy with all of his gear and your gear not touching the ground. And it's like 100 yards and then turn around and come back. So I pick up Fred, take off running. I get to the turnaround, come back, and about halfway, my calf started cramping. I'm like, ugh. You know, my legs are like giving me this feeling of like, are you sure you want to keep doing this? So
Fred's not a big guy.
No, he's not.
Nope.
Right? So with Fred and all of his gear, he probably weighs in the 190 range.
Yeah. It was a lot. It looked far watching him walk back.
So there's 50 points. Now he's got to pick me up and he's got to take me down and back. Right? So that's 100 points. It's just a physical challenge. But it's worth doing if you can do it. Now we go over to this creek and they have all of this caution tape set up. And you have to low crawl under this caution tape down into the creek bed and through the creek. And We didn't bring a damn trash bag, which is what we needed to get through there without getting our gear wet. Now, we were smart. Once we low-crawled through the grass and we got to a certain point, we stopped. We took our shoes off. We wrapped them up in a tarp because there's no fucking way we wanted to get our shoes wet.
Or feet. Or your feet are getting wet, but yeah.
Just our shoes, more importantly.
Yeah.
So then, now we're trying to figure out how to get through this whole ordeal, right? With keeping our gear as dry as possible. Well, Fred took my pack, and it was pretty simple. He just kind of put it on his back, and you know, I lifted every one of the caution tapes so he could get underneath.
Why did you guys switch packs?
It just happened that way. I was trying to do it one at a time. Like, Fred goes all the way through, and then we come back, we get his gear, and then I go all the way through, and we lift the tape up as we go. But then Fred was like, oh, just go get the other one. I got this. I'm like, okay. Well, I put his pack on, and he's got shit attached to the front, so I can't get as low as he was getting. I'm getting tangled up. I mean, I just couldn't do it the same way he did. So I had to take his pack off and pretty much drag it through the water. And I'm like, shit, you know, this sucks. So we finally get through there. Boom, 100 points. Okay. Now we go over to the next challenge, which is to saw through a giant ash tree that has fallen over with a old school, like 1800 saw. Every disc that you cut off is worth like 10 points.
10 points, that's it?
I think it might have been elevated after that because not a lot of people were getting one to fall off.
Yeah.
It was quite an accomplishment to get one to fall off.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of chatting with some of the ROs and seeing if they'll give us any advice. One of them was like, yeah, wait for like two or three teams to go through.
Yeah.
After they give up, you just start sawing on theirs.
And he said about one of every third team would get it off because each team, yeah, would give up and by the third or fourth team,
yeah,
finish off that piece that was.
So I think Chris was running that stage,
yeah,
and we're sitting there. We're about halfway through. Somebody else had left it, and we start sawing. And we go for like 5 minutes, and I'm like, Fred, we are not making it through this. Like, this fucking
time limit?
10 minutes. This fucking sucks. Let's just abandon this stage.
It looked hard.
And he's like, okay. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. So I find a fucking broken target, and I jam the piece of steel into the cut that we made. And I start prying on it. Fred's like, what are you doing? I was like, there's no fucking way I'm helping out another team
with all
the cutting that we just did. So I break it off so that any other team that comes behind us has got to start fresh. Because I'm just a dick like that.
It's a competition.
It is a competition, right? So break that off. Now we go over to the rock climbing wall, which was awesome. I love doing the rock climbing. I put my harness on, throw my helmet up, and start climbing up the hill. And, you know, Fred's on belay, climb all the way up, touch the top, come back down, and we had to do it twice, two different climbing lanes. And it was really good. I think.
Do you need your own climbing gear?
They have climbing gear there, but you run the risk of having to wait if there's a backup. Right?
Okay.
They only have so many climbing gear. So if somebody's using it and there's no free climbing gear, then you, it's time.
Okay. Did you have your own shoes?
I brought my own shoes. I brought my all my own gear. So did Fred. What's nice is you have what's called a cache bag. So the cache bags will stay in one spot, or they might get moved and you'll get told where you can find it. But you can stash all kinds of shit in there. Water, food, snacks. Like, so some of the food that I brought, besides all those protein bars, was I ordered a pizza the night before, and I wrapped up all the pieces in aluminum foil. I took half in my pack and half stayed in the cache bag. And it was, I tell you what, that pizza could have been 5 days old. It still would have been amazing.
Yeah.
So all of our climbing gear also got stashed in the cache bag, so we didn't have to carry it around or anything like that. So we did the climbing, 100 points right there, boom, good to go. Down the road we go to the next challenge, which wasn't that difficult. You just had to climb up a hill and put a T-post on the fence, and now you're done. So now we've completed challenges 1 through 9, but we haven't started any of the land nav. But the way that the map was set up, it made sense to do the challenges before we started land nav, because the first land nav point was at the end of the last challenge. So you're already there. So then we start doing land nav, get to checkpoint 1, clip our little card, get our little signal that we've been to that point, and now it's decision time. Do we want to go get the bonus checkpoint, or do we want to continue on? Go to 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way around. Now you have to hit the checkpoints in order. That was a rule this year. Every mandatory checkpoint had to be land napped in order. So you couldn't skip around or anything like that.
Did they have them laid out so that they were they scattered? One through, but how many were
they weren't scattered, they were kind of in a good order,
right.
But every mission had a couple land nav points where you're like, this is fucking bullshit, because I would have not done it this way, right? They were not in order.
Okay.
So like mission 1, for example, checkpoint 8 was beyond checkpoint 9. So you had to go past checkpoint 9 and then come back. And that sucked.
And if you can't find one, you can't move on. You have to keep...
So there is, every mission you're allowed to skip one mandatory checkpoint and still complete that mission. So going back, decision time. Do we want to go get bonus checkpoint, or do we want to go to checkpoint 2? We knew, based off of what time it was, if we went to go get that bonus checkpoint, that's a 2 hour fucking sidetrack.
For how many points?
It's equal for what we found out is a bonus checkpoint is equal to a regular checkpoint in terms of point value.
Okay.
So is it worth it? It depends. Do you value those points as much as you value your time? Our plan was we needed to finish mission 1 before dark. We didn't want to get stuck on the mountain in dark, because navigating the mountain in nighttime is fucking hard. And you saw, being on the RO side, all of the fucking people that got trapped up on the mountain in dark, not able to find any of those points.
Yep.
We didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So we got to checkpoint 9 on mission 1 right at nightfall, and it worked out perfect, except for the return trip. That kind of fucked us a little bit.
Is that when you fell?
That was when I fell. All right. Fred was like, let's go this way. And the reason Fred was a little erratic when it came to like getting off the mountain is Fred had been out of water since checkpoint 6.
Okay.
And there's no water sources on top of the mountain.
Or this year?
This year.
Okay.
And you saw, from your perspective, a lot of people were getting fucked up on that mountain.
They got stuck
up there all night, couldn't find the points, and there's no water source.
There's no water, and that's why I was curious if it was a mental thing with some of them kind of panicking because they knew there was no water up there.
Could have been, and that's kind of where Fred was at. Fred was like, we need to get down. I'm out of water, I'm out of water, I'm out of water. And I'm like, okay. So we're following this draw, trying to come down the mountain, and we hit a cliff. And I'm like, we can't go this way. So we jump over a finger to another draw, and there's another cliff. He's like, well, let's just try it. I'm like, okay, all right. So we start to go down this mountain, right? And we're literally scaling this mountain, coming down this cliff face, and it's like, you come down about 10 feet, and then there's like a flat ledge, and then you got more climbing going down, right? We have no ropes, we have no safety gear. And one of the boulders I stepped on gave way. I fall, and then the boulder comes on top of me, right? I think that boulder kind of saved my life, or I'd have been off the edge. So I get up, got some bumps and bruises, and I'm like, I'm not fucking going this way, okay? The fastest way down at this point is for us to just jump and see if we live. I'm going back up.
That's not a strategy I would recommend for anyone.
So we go back up. Now we got a free climb up everything that we just came down, right? About 30 feet. So we climb back up.
How's Fred with climbing stuff like that?
This wasn't a hard technical climb.
All right.
It was just vertical, right? But the holds were good. But you're tired, you're out of water, and it's dark out now.
Yeah.
So it was rough. And that just happened to be the same spot where we had done the climbing. So that rock wall that we climbed up, we were now trying to come down that.
I think I heard one of the guys say, what do they think, that the ropes are still there? That it's going to go back down the same way?
No, that was not what we thought.
Well, we did see a lot of lights. We'd see headlights coming down. So people's facing kind of the downward effort. And then you would see red lights shortly after because the teams were changing their mind and going back up. So I don't think you guys were the only ones that had to go up and down a few times trying to figure out how to get, how to get out of there.
So I'm like, Fred, if we keep pushing to the east, I know that the mountain kind of tapers off and it's a nice, gentle slope going down. Well, he didn't, you know, his mindset was, I'm out of fucking water, right? And so I'm like, we got to go this way. So we start going up, we get back up, we start taking the top of the mountain, and he looks over, he's like, what about this way? This way looks good. I'm like, Fred, we've been wrong twice already. I don't want to waste any time being wrong a third time.
Yeah.
Let's just make sure we go until we know for sure that we're driving or we're walking on the right path.
Yeah.
He's like, all right. And then he asked me, well, how long do you think? I'm like, until our fucking Lamborghinis get us there. I have no idea, right? We just have to go this way, man. All I can tell you is this is the best bet. So we finally get down. Get to a water source, pump water, and now we're good to go. Right?
Did you have water?
I thought I was empty, right? Because every time I took a sip out of the Camelback, I would get like
air.
I get half water, half air, like little bubbles.
Yeah.
So I thought I was out. Well, it turns out when we got to the cache bag where we had water stored, pull our Camelback out, and I actually had like, you know.
Poor Fred.
I had like a tenth of a bag of water in there. He's like, oh, you had water. I was like, I didn't know that I had water. I think the way that my pack was strapped, it was compressing everything and I wasn't able to get water out of it. So anyways, made it down, get to our cache bags. We, you know, we grab water. I eat some pizza. And then we are now done with mission one.
I think that's when I got dressed. Is that when I...
That's when you found us, right? Now, one thing that we probably could have done to save us a little time was go hit challenges that were down the road. We could have done that.
A lot of teams, I think, did that. They came down and went straight there, but you didn't know.
We totally forgot that there were challenges over there. So we went to headquarters, turned in our Mission 1 card, got Mission 2, plotted all the points, right? And we were going to start land navving Mission 2, and it's middle dark, right? And then, you know, somehow we remembered that there were other challenges, and we're like, fuck, this is going to work out perfectly, because we wanted to refrain from doing as much land nav at night as possible. That's where you get messed up, right?
So,
and the moon wasn't up yet.
So heat over navigating at night, because navigating at night is difficult. But, well, I guess light is...
It's a lot slower to navigate at night.
Yeah, okay.
So, we went down, we did the challenges, and this is, 1 o'clock in the morning?
3 o'clock.
Sometime. I don't know what time it was. I know that we finished those challenges, and we headed back down the road, and it was like 4 a.m., right? So the challenges we did in the middle of the night. Let's talk about those.
I was going to say, you have to talk about those. I didn't get to see them.
So.
I saw them, but not you guys do the night.
There was quite a few of them here. There were 7 challenges total. And some of them were a little ridiculous. Like, crack this cipher. They hand you this card, and there's a grid at the top. It turns out, to crack the cipher, you have to go to this grid, which is way the fuck out of the way. So immediately I was like, Fred, we're not going. We're not doing this one. It's out of our way. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit our timeline. Nope. So there's one challenge we skipped, right? The next one was you have to capture some type of live animal and bring it back. So we're like, okay. So we're thinking like maybe we'll go catch a fish or something like that. Now, you told me an interesting story where there were some kids playing down in the creek. They caught a crawdad. and they ended up selling it to a team for Skittles.
I had seen them walking out with it, and I was like, are you guys going to sell that? Somebody, one of these guys will buy that from you.
I'd have
like,
definitely given.
They're like, no, we're not selling it.
I'd have paid $50 for that car.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted money. I think that when I said
Skittles
sold,
won them over.
I know, when I said sell, they didn't want any money. So then a little while later, we saw a team of guys first darting for a rabbit with their sticks. And the rabbit darted the other way, but they caught up with the kids, and apparently the Skittles were what sold them.
Well, so. Next year that'll definitely be on my mandatory item. Is you got to have items to bribe adults, and you got to have items to bribe children.
Yep.
So we didn't catch a live animal. We didn't even attempt it, really. I mean, it was just such a far-fetched thing to do.
There was another challenge that I think you skipped before that. I heard you guys skipped it. I didn't realize what it was until after, but the jumping in the back of the truck.
Oh, so the jumping in the... Well, that'll come later, because we didn't quite skip it yet. We kept revisiting that.
Oh, okay, because when I heard... I didn't know what it was. I was driving down there before you, around the time you guys got there. And somebody was like, yeah, go see who's getting soaked. And so you guys had skipped it. I didn't know why, but I was like, okay, whatever reason they skipped it, they were probably smart because they would have gotten soaked in the middle of the night.
So we'll come back to that one. So we don't catch the live animal, right? Now they have a tire toss. It's a pretty decent tire. I think the tire weighed like, I don't know. I could pick it up myself. But I couldn't throw it by myself.
Yeah, I saw some struggling with some other teams.
I would say maybe 150 pounds. Okay. So you got to pick this tire up and you got to throw it, but it has to land on a flat side. And you got to throw it all the way down to another point, and that's one. And then you bring it back, and then you go back, right? You do it as many times as you can in I want to say 5 minutes. So we did it three times. We probably could have done another one. But being the guy that I am, I wanted to leave it far away from the starting point so that the ROs would have to move it back.
I think okay.
Hindsight being 2020, we should have taken it back and gotten more points.
You should have more points because I think they just left it at one of the starting lines and let the other team.
I'm sure Andy did.
Yeah, they weren't carrying that thing.
So there we go. We got three tire movements. That got us 60 points, right? And then they had another one where the target was set out. You had to shine a light and do the FBI identification. We only got two. That hurt. That hurt bad.
I don't think it is that the one with the bright light that
you
did?
Yeah.
I don't think any other teams did it at night. From what I saw, I don't know that it.
I know. We should have done it during daylight.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
One team, they were just like, nope, we can't do this. We can't see anything.
So then they had the final challenge there. They're like, all right, make sure you empty your pockets. You can have nothing, no weapons, yada, yada, yada. And I'm thinking, okay, they're going to handcuff us. They're going to do something weird. And I'm like, Fred, you got a knife? He's like, I don't know. Should I get one? Should I get my handcuff key? I'm like, right? So I got a headlamp on, and Fred's got his headlamp. That's the only thing we're allowed to have, but we're only allowed to have one. So I got mine on, but I don't have the light on, and I'm wearing a black beanie. So you can't tell that I have a headlamp. Fred's got his headlamp in his hand. So Andy brings us over. He's like, all right, guys, you have your headlamp? Fred gives it to him. He's like, all right, is that it? You got nothing else? And I'm like, nope, got nothing else, right? And Fred's looking at me. He's like, Tyler, what's that on your head?
Oh,
I'm like, God damn it, Fred. You just ratted me out. I'm trying to sneak this in. So they take my headlamp, and then they got a metal detector. So they are wanding us, trying to see if we got any other items on us, right?
And they also did this with the guys that were going in. They did this with everybody.
They
made sure nobody had any weapons.
Yeah. So
found out why later.
Them knowing me and my mindset of always trying to, you know, one up. Not only did I get the metal wand, but I got like, you know, damn near naked searched.
Oh, Andy did.
As they're like credit cards sweeping my asshole and everything to make sure I got nothing hidden up there. And so I'm getting patted down, and Andy's like, check his beanie. Definitely check that motherfucker's beanie. And I'm like, okay, guys, I don't have anything. So they put a...
They're protecting themselves, in all fairness.
So they put a paintball mask over my face, and then they put a hood over me. And now they take a rope, and they tie my hands together. And they do the same thing with Fred. And then they have us walk around, And he's turning me left, turning me right, telling me to duck down, step over this wire, yada, yada, yada. And they're doing all this to try to confuse where you are. So I'm trying to count how many times we go left, how many times we go right. Like, I don't know what this challenge is at the moment. So I'm just trying to get an idea of where the fuck am I, right? So while we're walking, I'm also undoing the rope on my hands. And, you know, unless they catch me, I'm going to be out of this fucking shackle here in a minute. They get to this wall. They tell me to kneel down, put my, you know, lean against the wall. I've already got my hands undone, right? Then here comes Fred. They set Fred down next to me. And they're like, all right, you guys are in an enemy encampment. And you have to break out of your shackles and look for the orange chem lights. Inside the orange chem light rooms, there is intelligence. You need to find the intelligence and collect everything that you can in 5 minutes. They're like, okay, got it. All right. So they leave. They say, ready, go. Get out of my rope shackle. Take my hood off. I'm like, Fred, let's go. He's like, I'm still tied up. I'm like,
you took your hood and your mask off.
Yes, I did. I took the mask off. I didn't know what it was for.
Right.
So I go over. I undo Fred and pull everything off of him. I'm like, all right, dude, let's go. So we start sneaking around. I'm looking for these orange chem lights, right? We come around the corner. We're kind of like snooping and pooping. And there's like some kind of metal backdrop behind me. And I could just hear ting, 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 ting. And I'm like, holy fuck. Someone's shooting at us with like airsoft pellets.
You don't have any protection on your face.
I have nothing on my face. I'm like, I yell. I'm like, time out. Tactical timeout. I'm like, nobody said to keep the mask on. Did not know you'd be shooting at us.
So they let you go back and put your mask on.
Can I get a second here? So Andy's like, go get your mask. I'm like, okay. So I go get my mask. I'm like, all right, Fred. Well, at least we know now they're going to fucking shoot at us. So we sneak over. We get to the, like, we're down this long corridor of, like, cow grading, right?
Yes.
And it opens up into this big yard. And across the yard, you can see these four doorways that got orange chem lights. I'm like, all right, that's where we got to go. And I kind of peek around the corner, and Justin starts fucking lighting me up. So I dive over fucking Fred.
I hear it was very dramatic of you.
I was trying not to get shot. And in the instructions, they did say, don't get caught. So I'm like, fuck, they're shooting at us. They now know we're here, right? So then I'm sitting with Fred. We're behind cover. And I'm like, all right, run across the courtyard into that first orange door. He's like, what? I'm like, just fucking run across there. So he takes off sprinting. And
how much did you see at night? I had night vision that I was watching from afar with, and it was funny to watch some teams, like, very confused.
The moon was up by now.
Okay, before that, I saw teams before you guys, and they looked so confused walking around that field. Like, they had no idea which direction to run.
Oh, no, you can see clear now.
Okay.
So, as Fred's running across his courtyard, I take off running towards Justin and tackle him into the fence, trying to take his gun. And he's like, all right, you win. You got it. I'm like, all right, cool. So I take off running after Fred. We get into the room, turn on the light, and the piece of intel is Hobbs 10th anniversary coloring book or something like that. We go to the next room, and it's a picture of a dick flying a drone. And then the next room was a squirrel taking a shit.
Justin drew these pictures.
And then the next room was like how to pack a mule and a horse, right? So we gather the intel, and then, you know, the scenario's over. So that was pretty fun, and, you know, I didn't get any body shots, but damn, they were really accurate on shooting me in the fucking hand. My left hand got, like, 5 shots to it. I don't know what
I know
was.
Some people got shot in the head. Some people, get, you know, the ROs came back like, oh, I know Jimmy got out of it. One of the teams came through, saw him, and was like, don't shoot Jimmy. Don't shoot Jimmy. And they took it out on Casey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the last challenge we did there. Super fun. We're still full of energy. Like, we feel good, right? So now we take off down the road, headed back towards headquarters, right? We have traversed this road 3 times already. Now we're headed back to headquarters. And we're talking along the way, like, should we get into the truck? One of the challenges we chose to skip was get into the back of the truck. If you commit to getting into the back of the truck, you get 100 points.
Oh.
But you don't know where they're going to take you, and you don't know what they're going to do to you.
Did you see hoods?
I heard there was going to be hoods involved. So I'm like, Fred, if they take us east, it's away from where we got to go. So we stop and we talk to Chris, and we're trying to pull as much info from Chris as we can. And I'm thinking, like, man, we could use this 100 points. Maybe we could bribe Jimmy. Maybe we could tell Jimmy, like, you know, as we're getting into the back of the truck, be like, hey, buddy, as we hand him a $20 bill, we'd like to go west. You know, like, I don't care what you do to me, just go west. But ultimately, we sided against it because we did find out. We thought that challenges 12 through 16, we found out that they would be open all day on Saturday. We didn't think that they would. We thought they would close at 6 a.m. Once we found out they were going to be open, we're like, fuck that truck. We're not getting in that truck, right? So down the road we go.
Which was smart, because what I think they did, they covered you, they covered your heads and took you out and watered you down with the fire hose.
Oh, fuck that.
And it was cold. I know Fred was cold at that point, and you guys would have been drenched through the night.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad we didn't get in the truck.
Yeah.
So,
during the day might have been fun, but nighttime, no.
It wasn't easy 100 points, but it would have set our timeline back a lot.
And froze you for the night.
So right now it's 4 a.m. We get to headquarters about 4:30. And from headquarters, we shoot an azimuth up the mountain. Now this is, it's still dark out. You can only see the ridgeline against the backlit sky of the moon. You can only see the ridgeline. So I shoot an azimuth. I'm like, we have nothing to physically walk and touch, right? And when you're navigating, anytime you're shooting an azimuth with your compass, you don't want to do a long travel distance, and you want to go to something that you can physically touch and then shoot another azimuth. So it's kind of like leapfrogging, right? I see that tree. I shoot my azimuth to that tree. I can physically go and touch it and reshoot another azimuth, but it's dark out. You can't do that. So I'm like, well, we're just going to walk to that peak, man. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. I can't fucking see anything. We're just going to go. So this is a click and a half movement up this mountain. Well, it turns out my navigation skills are pretty fucking good, because we were within 10 meters of the navigation point once we got all the way to the top. By the time we got up there, it's 5:30. The sun is coming up. And boom, there's a point. Fuck yes. We hit checkpoint 1 and 2 and got to checkpoint 3 within an hour. I would say we stopped at the top at checkpoint 1, changed out our feet, socks, stuff like that. We had some food. By 6:30, we were moving, and we got down to checkpoint 3 by 7:30. So we were making really good time. The movement wasn't bad, but again, going back to what our whole game plan was, we didn't want to do navigation at night.
Yeah.
And we succeeded. We were now doing mission 2, and it's daylight out. So
did you guys rest or sleep at all?
No, we didn't take any resting breaks per se. Anytime one of us had to stop for something, like if Fred had to stop and redo his tape because his feet were bothering him, for 5 minutes I was sleeping. Like, if we slept, it was for a 5 or 10 minute stint while the other person was doing something to fix himself. If I was like, hey man, I need to stop, I want to eat, or I need to get in my pack, or I need to do something, then for that 5 minutes, Fred was sleeping, right? So that's the way that we worked in any type of sleeping. But we didn't have any breaks where we just said, let's take a nap, right? So we get to checkpoint 3, 7:30, we got to wait a little bit, which was fine with us. We could eat, refit our gear, fucking reorganize, and wait for those challenges to open. So now we're at the last 4 challenges that we'll be able to hit, and we need all of them. We need all of these challenges to get the 16 passing challenges that we'll need to complete the sack. So we have to complete them. First one was just a basic gear check. No problem. They asked for 10 items to show them that we actually brought what was required on the gear list. Boom, easy 100 points right there. The next one was code words using your safety whistle. So I wrote down a little code really fast, And for numbers, Fred would take a knee. For letters, Fred would stand. And we had a little 5x5 grid. So for that grid, if you can think of the letters in a, you know, five columns and five rows, right? You're only missing one letter if you do that. So Fred would whistle four times, there'd be a pause, and then he'd whistle five times. So you go down to row number four, and then over number five, and that's your letter. So we got that code
easy. Did you have to draw this out?
Yeah, I had to write the code down and give it to the RO and see if it matched what he gave Fred to relay to me.
Okay.
So we passed that one, and then we had a cipher that we had to break. That was interesting, right? They got some codes out there. You have to figure out the code and what the sentences were, and, you know, it didn't take us long, but we did get through it. And then you had the final challenge to do there, which was you had five paragraphs, and they're kind of like word riddles. And, you know, one of them that still gets me is you have 10 pair of white socks, 10 pair of black socks. They're not tied together, so they're individual socks. So you have 40 socks in a drawer. How many times would you have to reach into the drawer to guarantee that you have a matching pair? And I'm sitting there thinking like, well, fuck. You know, Fred kind of thought the same thing you did when I posed this problem to you.
Yeah.
If I pull out 20 socks, then the rest of the socks will all be the same. Yes, that would be true if you could physically look in the drawer.
Yeah.
But that word kept coming back to me, guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, fuck, you'd have to pull out 39 socks so you know what the color of the last sock is. So that was my thinking. Well, it turns out we were both wrong, because if you reach in twice, the third sock is guaranteed to give you a match, no matter what.
Yeah.
I overthought the problem, but out of the five word problems, we got 3 out of 5 correct. So we still got a passing score, worked out, right? So now we're all happy. We had water. We passed a really clean, nice-looking cow trough. We didn't fill up. We didn't fill up. We had water. We didn't think we'd need to.
Yeah.
So we had to go back over this mountain ridge.
Hold on. Do you think... Okay, go ahead.
All right. So we had to go over this mountain ridge, back over, right, on the headquarters side of things. We hit checkpoint 4, then we go all the way around to checkpoint 5, 6, okay? 6 is all the way at the end of this mountain range. Then you gotta backtrack to 7. This was a 4-click movement, 4 kilometers long. Now we are back to a scenario where we don't have water.
And it's 100 degrees outside.
It's 100 degrees outside, and it's a bowl of, it's just an oven. Right, all the dead grass around you is just radiating heat.
It was hot.
It was rough.
It was hot just sitting out there.
So the first cow trough that we came up to, while we were finding these checkpoints, it was all algae and dry, and I mean the algae was, it looked like a block of algae. And I was like, no, I'm not getting water from there. We'll find somewhere else. So we hit up like 3 different cow troughs. They were bone dry. Fuck, you know, we saw some cows off in the distance, and we're like, well, if they're gathered over there, there's got to be water. But we didn't want to break that far from our route.
Yeah.
So we're like, fuck it, we're going to tough it, we're going to keep pushing, right? We're trying to push our bodies without water as far as we can. Finally, we get to a point, we realized we had passed up checkpoint 7, right? We missed our road. I think what happened was, it's such a long stretch, and you're so miserable right now that you're literally just head down, staring at the ground, 1 foot in front of the other. And we passed our point. So I'm like, well, fuck it, dude. We can skip one mandatory checkpoint, and number 7 is now that checkpoint because I don't want to go back. He's like, okay. We look to the left, about 100 meters away. There's a cow trough. We're going to get water. Walk over. And I'm like, is there water in it? Because Fred beat me there by like 10 meters. He's like, yeah, there is. I'm like, well, how does it look? He's like, there's 2 dead birds in it. I'm like, oh, man. You know, like, and these birds have been there for At least the whole day.
The concern would be, did the water kill him, or did they die before they fell in?
At this point, we didn't give a fuck. And there was cows around us, and the cows were alive.
Cows were alive. So,
I reach in, I scoop the dead birds out. And then I go to the other side of the cow trough as if it's going to matter that I'm on a different side away from where the birds were.
It just makes you feel better.
I throw my pump in there, start pumping.
Deeper, so they...
I did. I went a few inches below the surface. Throw my pump in there, fill up my Camelback, and then I just put the pump up to my face and start pumping water into my mouth. And it was so good. I mean, it was the best dead bird water I've ever had. Right? It was almost like
bird flu.
It was almost like water softener. I would tell you, I have pooped today and it came out regular.
That was going to be let's see how you do.
And I don't feel bad. So
far, so good.
So far, so good.
So what I was going to ask is, do you think strategically, should you fill up any chance you get, even if you do have some water?
Most definitely. Anytime you get a chance to fill water, you should take the time to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a hard lesson we learned. It didn't affect us, but it could have. So now we leave the cow trough. Get this. Checkpoint 8 is down near the hard pavement road, the edge of the property, and there's actually a cattle structure there with a working well.
Oh.
So we're like pumping this well, and face is buried in this well, and we didn't drink from our Camelbacks, you know, because at the cow trough, we pumped water into our mouths.
Yeah.
At the checkpoint 8, we used the well, so we hadn't touched our Camelbacks yet, so they're still completely full, which was nice. 8 to 9, not a bad movement. We get there, we find the point. Now 9 to 10, this is another 4 kilometer movement. Halfway in between, we're going to hit the Willis Ranch.
Yes.
And there's a well there.
Okay.
So again, we get there, fill our water, and pump water into our faces. Now I should tell you that at some point in the middle of the night, fucking Fred's Camelback. They got those little circular grommets.
Yes, it was when you were at the headquarters.
Circular grommets that are, what are they?
They're like O-rings on
O-rings,
yeah.
Right? Well, his blew out.
Yeah.
So he could not get any suction from his tube.
Yeah.
Anytime he wanted to drink water, he'd pull his Camelback all the way out and drink from the bladder itself.
I wonder if he went through water faster because you're not sucking it out versus like pouring it in.
He actually drank less water on day 2 because he had to keep pulling it out.
Okay.
All right. So we're halfway there. We're at the Willis Ranch. We get water. That's also where all those challenges were. So we saw a few people. And at this point, we had 3.5 hours to complete to get back to headquarters and turn in our scorecards.
Yeah.
We still got 2 more land nav points we got to get to, and they're not close. They're 2 kilometers away. So we get over there, find checkpoint 10, start working our way back, find checkpoint 11, and now it's 5 p.m. We've got 2 hours. All right, Fred, we have to go. We have to put our heads down and fucking walk, right? Because it's a good 5K movement back to headquarters to turn in your scorecards. And I was figuring we were moving, even though we were tired, if we were walking on the road, we kept a pretty good 4 kilometer per hour pace.
Okay.
So I knew it would take us a little over an hour to get back to headquarters, which didn't leave us a lot of time to do the final 2 challenges.
Yeah.
So we get back to headquarters, and turns out the last shooting stage was down because there was a heat casualty emergency. For whatever reason, you know, it is what it is. You didn't get to shoot the last stage. So in replace of the 2 challenges, you could do 100 burpees, which I said, no, I'm not doing 100 burpees. Or you could carry this 5-gallon jug of water, right? 5-gallon bucket. And you had to carry it all the way over to these hay bales, maybe 200 meters, take it over these giant stacks of hay bales, and then bring it back. and you could only spill an inch of water off the top. I thought it was going to be harder than it was. It really wasn't that bad. So we did that, we got our 100 points, and now it is 7 p.m. and the Sniper Adventure Challenge has been completed. And it's amazing, when something is over, how much energy you have when it's all done. You would think that you would be dead.
I would say not all teams felt that way.
Okay.
I saw some teams come in and they were just like, done.
I wasn't.
Done.
My feet were fine.
Yeah.
And now that I know it was over, I was like, okay, let's
burpees,
go.
Burpees, 200 burpees now.
You know, like.
I was surprised you said no to the burpees.
Okay, I said no to the burpees because last year we did burpees in exchange for a shooting stage.
Yeah.
And it was fucking brutal. It was brutal.
I saw one team do it, and it was the team that won. And it didn't look brutal.
I think they had to do it because they were lacking on challenges.
Probably, yeah.
Going through the sack, we did so many challenges. I was told that we had the highest amount of challenge points.
Okay.
Maybe, I know partially because we did more challenges than anybody else, but also we scored really well on a lot of the shit that we did.
Yeah.
So, from what I gather, no teams completed Mission 3, right? But the team that beat us had beat us out by a couple land navigation points. They picked up some bonus points, we didn't, and ultimately that's what led to them beating us. I haven't looked at the scores. From what I found out, one land nav point or us doing those 100 burpees, we would have won. So hindsight 2020, should we have done the burpees? Yeah.
I don't know.
But
we
did
don't
we have
sure.
time?
Yeah.
By the time we got done carrying that 5-gallon water bucket, time was up.
That was a long water bucket haul.
It was. So, I mean, I'm still happy with our performance. We didn't make any big mistakes. We had no land nav errors. Like, we didn't fuck up. We didn't spend 4 hours looking for one land nav point. Like, everything went the way that we wanted it.
Yeah.
The one thing that we couldn't account for was how bad the heat would affect us. Fred and I both wear the same shoes. We're wearing ultra trail running shoes. They were amazing. They felt great on the feet. They're lightweight. They dry quickly. But I think the difference is we both taped our feet up, but my tape was working way better than Fred's. But the socks, I wear the thick, heavyweight wool toe socks. Fred likes that thin Dynamat sock. It's like a hybrid of something, like the stretchy, what is that material? Like spandex almost.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
And it's thin. So as we're walking.
Is it moisture wicking? What is
it? Is,
like
it is moisture wicking.
Yeah.
But as we're walking on the hot gravel, Fred's feet are on fire. And now he's starting to get blisters. And, you know, things were just taking a turn for the worse because your feet are what get you everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think the heavyweight socks that I like would save me because I didn't feel anything, you know. The only thing I was dealing with was going uphill. I was perfectly fine, right? Physical fitness, everything we did to prepare for this match was good. But that rock falling on my ass, the way that it hit my knee and ankle, going downhill, we were much slower. Like the pain that I was experiencing going downhill was debilitating. So I was having to use my hiking poles as crutches almost to come down. And then on flat ground, the knee was giving me some issues. So again, back to the ibuprofen, just trying to, you know, get some of the inflammation to go away. You know, but the things that we couldn't plan for, one, getting busted up by a rock, two, the heat. I think the heat definitely slowed us down.
The heat hurt everybody.
Big time.
Everybody was having a hard time.
So, and then, you know, for Mission 2, you spent most of Mission 2 out in this big old grassland where there was zero trees. Zero. There was no way to get out of the sun. Thank God I had a hat on. Because that was all. That was the only shade I had was the shade that I created myself.
Yeah.
So, but it was a fucking really cool challenge. And, you know, like, I didn't have any thoughts of, like, oh, man, I want to quit. But I did have thoughts of, like, we could slow down, we could take a break. But when you put that much preparation into a competition like this, right, and you know that your partner has equally put in so much effort, you don't want to let him down.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be the reason that you guys fail, you know?
And so, look back and realize, well, we could have pushed harder, we just chose not to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I felt like we both pushed extremely hard. I know Fred's feet were killing him.
Yeah.
But he, not one time, not one single time did he slow down. Like, I can't imagine the pain that he was in. Well, I guess I can. I've been in that pain before, but he didn't slow down.
Yeah.
Like, if I said, dude, we got to go up this mountain, he's like, all right, fuck it, let's do it. You know, like, the effort on both sides was there because we didn't want to let each other down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I put up an Instagram post and a Facebook post talking about, if you haven't done this before, it will test you. It will test your mental fortitude. It will test your grit. It will test your body. You know, there is some physical preparedness that you need to get into. And we can talk about that. Like, my training plan for this entire year, from last year leading up till now, has been not a lot of hiking. Believe it or not, I did some hikes that were decent distances, like 10, 12 miles, but I didn't do a lot of them. I did a lot more trail running. I'm running about, I would say, per week, 30 to 35 miles of solid trail running, you know, 5 miles a day, running mountain trails, same shoes that I hiked in or something similar. Sometimes I would wear weight, like a weight vest, and do runs that way. But everything was focused on my cardio, not so much carrying the weight, but my cardio and getting my feet where I wanted them. And a lot of people think, like, getting my feet where I wanted them means I need to have calluses all over the place. That is not how my feet look. I try to take care of them. I try to shave off the calluses. I soak them in, like, these weird vinegar baths to kill the fungus and shit like that. You know, I use this foot lotion to take care of my feet, not beat them up so that they're just used to abuse, but actually take care of them. And then I learned how to tape my feet so that I could prevent blisters, because blisters are a result of friction. So if I could use tape as a barrier between friction of the shoe and the skin, then I'd be better.
Yeah.
And I actually got that from a book I read about taking care of your feet. Like, so important to do that, to be mindful of your feet and how you can push them and how you need to take care of them, because that is your vessel.
For 40 miles, if your feet are blistered and skin is torn partway through, try to walk on that for miles and miles.
Some people are getting feet tore up within the first 5 miles.
Because of water, not having dry socks.
Not changing your socks, not taking care of feet, not doing a proper regimen of how to keep your feet appropriate, right? And that is going to kill you. Everybody breaks mentally eventually. Eventually, everybody reaches a limit where they just mentally cannot handle the pain or, you know, whatever it is that they're going through. And if you are having to go 30 or 40 miles with your feet fucked up, that's a long time to mentally handle that pain.
Well, and if you have to figure, I got to get back, the further out I walk, the further out I got to get back to that starting point or to headquarters, and that can fuck with your head, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely, right? So your feet are a huge, huge area that you need to focus on. But again, like, I did a lot of trail running. I didn't put so many miles with a pack. I wanted to go the trail running part. I read a lot about guys who climb Everest and K2 and some of these amazing mountains around the world. And a lot of them, they do hikes, but they're not out there doing Mount Everest hikes every week to prepare for this.
No.
They're doing cardiovascular stuff, making sure their body can handle elevation and, you know, the cardio that's involved in climbing up these mountains. You know, I definitely kept hitting the weight room, building strength in my legs and squats and things like that. But it wasn't like I'm out there trying to be a bodybuilder. It was more functional, geared towards, I know what I'm putting my body through, and I have to make sure we're ready for that.
I would think the weight training might have helped with some of the challenges you did need strength, but leg strength, as far as how you can itself, I can't imagine weight training is a necessity. Definitely no.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So that's some of the preparation that went into it, but the mental side of it is a whole nother animal. You know, being able to tough it out and telling yourself you can't quit, or you set many goals. You got to get to this checkpoint. When you get to this checkpoint, your reward is food, or, you know, like you can find different ways to continually push yourself mentally. And, this is a far, far different competition than any of the other shooting matches that we do because of the physical stress that's involved in this one. But when it comes to preparing for something like this, if you were preparing for just a regular shooting match, you would still prepare the same way in terms of thought process. What do I need to do? If I'm shooting a PRS or NRL match, right? Are you just going to one day grab your rifle and say, I'm going to go shoot this match, but your rifle weighs 22 pounds and you're not used to moving with it and going from position to position? No, right? These are things that you would practice for. I'm private instructing a female right now. Her rifle doesn't weigh that much. It's an 18-pound rifle, but she is not used to moving it from one spot to the next. So a lot of the dry fire practice I have her doing doesn't involve so much, hey, I want you to just put your rifle on this position and, you know, perfect your dry fire. It's, hey, I want you to move your rifle from this position to this position 30 fucking times because you need to get used to carrying that weight and moving and feeling how that rifle feels with your body, right? So same thing, preparation into anything that you're going to do, you need to think about the exercises, the diet, you know, things that you need to prepare for, to be the best at whatever it is that you're trying to do. Shooting's just a portion of it. So, is there anything else cool you saw from your perspective?
You know, I saw how hard the ROs work. Everybody that's running the match, they worked really hard and they were having a good time. It was fun from my point of view to watch the teams come through, watch their attitudes, and everybody was out there having a good time. I don't know if watching it made me feel like, ooh, I want to do this someday. but it was interesting. It was an interesting setup. It was really cool to watch.
But you're going to do it next year, right?
You know, I probably would. I think I could be persuaded. Talking to a few people about it, because a lot of people ask, are you going to do this? Are you going to do it next year? And I was like, you guys are not selling it well.
So knowing what you know now, having been there and saw one, I'll tell you the first time I ever did this, I was 6 months out of the Marine Corps. When I went to this challenge, it was held in New Mexico. I didn't read the rules right, so we fucked up on that part. But I also took my military-style rucksack, and I packed everything I could. All kinds of extra shit. I might need these batteries. I might need this 550 cord. My pack weighs 60 pounds.
Yeah, no, I know that. I know enough, and I always refer back to doing Whitney because that so far is the hardest thing I've ever done. That was a 2-day hike. We camped. I carried a heavy pack, and just from experience of carrying that much weight, if you don't need something, do not take it.
Okay, so knowing what you know about this competition, if you were going to do it next year, now is the time to start preparing.
Oh, I've already been thinking about it.
So what,
a couple people were,
what would you do? What has been going through your mind? Like, okay, if I'm going to do this next year, these are the things I want to focus on for my training, and this is the kind of gear I want to run.
I would definitely try to, as far as gear, I think there's time. I mean, you'd have time. Gear's part of, I don't think there's a rush to get that figured out. I would think the physical aspect of it is what I would start with. I would try to pick up weight training as far as strengthening legs, hiking a lot more. I've been trail running a bit this past year since the gyms have been closed down, finding shoes. And probably as far as gear, I would consider looking at shoes and getting my feet, probably, like you were saying, the importance of that, finding shoes and socks that I was comfortable with, and doing a lot of hiking and trail running. trying to find altitude hikes in altitude would probably be good within the last 6 months of next year's. So
yeah, the altitude here is, if I remember correctly, with the heat and everything, somewhere in the 9,000 to 10,000 range.
Yeah, and I'm at sea level, so 9 to 10. I would definitely need to do some hikes. There's hikes around me where I could get into 10, 11. But time of year, so once it starts getting cold and we start getting snow, you know, I might need to consider getting hikes and long hikes in, just to get myself used to walking up those mountains.
And then what do you think would be the ideal pack weight? Like, how much weight would you say is, what would be your target weight?
From looking at yours, you said yours was what, 36 with water?
Yep, 36 and a half.
I would imagine 30 to 35. No more than 35.
Okay.
But I would walk around, I would probably train with weight on.
Yeah.
Just to get used to it, because your shoulders, I don't know, you don't have didn't have an issue with your shoulders, but I think that carrying 35 pounds on my shoulders for 40 miles would...
Well, a lot of it comes into like your pack and how your pack is set up, and I got mine set up the right way. I reach out to the right people. I mean, in the military, we don't learn any of this shit.
Right.
You just put your pack on, you shut the fuck up, and you walk.
Yeah, if it's fitted to your body and around your waist, right, you shouldn't be carrying the weight on your shoulders.
I had zero weight on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And everything was on my hips, centrally located, so that, you know, my whole body was carrying the weight, not just a portion.
Yeah.
You know, not my shoulders, my traps, you know. Because that'll wear you the fuck out really fast.
Yeah.
If one part of your body is doing all the work. Trekking poles. Okay, I saw some people out there without trekking poles. That's a no-no, guys.
And lightweight ones. I don't know. Like, the gear that I have that I think I'd be able to use, I might have to consider the weight of what all that stuff weighs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because every little bit counts. So I think the poles that I have are probably heavier than I would want to carry.
Well, ounces equal pounds, and pounds equal pain.
Yeah.
So you got to be cognizant of all of that. You know, I would have taken all of my pizza with me, but I didn't want that extra weight, regardless of how much it was.
How many times did you go back to the cash bag?
Because it was centrally located between everything, every mission that you did, every challenge that you would go to, the cache site was located central, and it never moved. For this competition, it didn't move, so it was pretty easy to go there whenever we needed. I want to say 1, 2, 3. We probably hit the cache bag 5 or 6 times, right? Just dumping shit off that we didn't need or grabbing shit that we needed. You know, at nighttime, it did get cold. I mean, from what we were used to all day, it was cold. It was fucking 50 degrees out. And wanted to put a little lightweight jacket on, and I put pants on. So at nighttime, I wore pants and a little jacket. And then once the sun came back out, I put that shit away. But the next opportunity I had to dump that shit,
drop it off
in the cash bag, because I don't want to carry that extra weight. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of strategy goes into it, especially there on site. There is strategy that has to happen before you ever take a foot off that fucking headquarters area. You got to have a somewhat decent plan, and you can't just run into it with like, just going to see how it goes.
Okay, so I just thought of something else. I do not know how to land navigate. So
that's a big factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess if I was training for this, I might want to learn how to navigate, use a compass. Use all the tools.
Most definitely, because
you want to depend on one person to do everything.
You cannot use a GPS in this competition. It is all map, compass, protractor, right? And you're right. You don't want one person to be the only person that knows how to navigate, because you want to be able to double check each other.
Yeah. And, it's a team effort. You should both be able to contribute to everything. Yeah, and double checking and make sure the other person knows what he's talking about. And if your brain starts to get a little foggy and there's fatigue and there's dehydration, you know, two minds, I'm sure, are better to make sure you're doing the right thing and planning out the best way.
Yeah. Well, it's a fun competition. It is brutal. It will beat your ass down and then just keep beating you down. But it's worth it. It's worth getting out there and seeing what you're capable of and learning these skills and just pushing yourself. And you know what? If you don't finish it, if you don't make it to the end, if you had to quit somewhere along the way, you became a heat casualty or medical, or you just physically said, I am done, mentally I cannot go on. You know what? You feel bad because you quit, but let me tell you, there's other people out there that didn't have the fucking nuts to even try.
Yeah.
So you need to give yourself a little bit of kudos for just getting out there and giving it a shot, no matter what. So if you do, I look forward to seeing you guys out there. Vanessa, I hope you think about this long and hard. We'll work on some land navigation classes. But I want to see you out there next year.
I think doing something like this, part of the fun is training for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you something to look forward to.
It gives you goals to work on. It gives you challenges in your mind to strive for. It gives you some sort of something to look forward to, a goal that you can.
Well, it's always easier to train when you have something that you are having to train for.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym or I'm going to start hiking more often. But for what? Like, if you have a reason.
Well, I'm sitting here right now and I hate when I finally reach the goal that I've been training for.
Now what?
If I don't overlap training goals, it's a struggle to find something else. But I'm going to do that Mammoth Sniper Challenge in January.
Mammoth?
Yep. So I'm already looking towards that competition, but it's important to keep some type of goal so that you have a focus.
Yep.
Right? It's really easy to lose focus if you don't know why you're training. So that's good. I think you're right. It's going to be fun. The whole journey, right? It's not just the event, but it's the journey of what did you do to prepare to get here? And, you know,
it gives you a better chance of successfully completing it as well. I think if you wait until the last 6 months and go like, oh crap, I need to get ready for this.
Yeah, no. I would say you could do it in a 6 month period, but if you had a whole year dedicated to getting your life, your body, your mind, you know, your diet right, you're definitely sitting much better. And you know, you said something earlier because I was a little worried coming into this competition. One, the last physical thing that I did was in Montana 2 weeks ago. I ran, or I hiked up the Great Northern Mountain, and then 2 days later, I ran it, trying to see what time I could get up to the summit and back. And that was the last thing I did. Right after that, I took a few private classes.
Vacation.
Took a vacation to Mexico for the weekend, and then I got super sick, got over the sickness, went to New Mexico, competed in a competition there, and then got sick again. The week before Sniper Adventure Challenge, and I got sick. Like, vomiting and diarrhea beyond belief, right? I'm driving back from New Mexico, and on the side of the freeway, I have to, like, slam on the brakes and jump out of the car to start puking. This is how bad it was. I don't know what I ate. I'm assuming it was some type of food poisoning, but the next day I was laid up, not getting out of bed, just trying to recover. And I was worried. I was worried that the past 2 weeks
consisted of Mexican food.
So. I know. But I was worried that the last 2 weeks of not physically doing anything was hurting me, on top of getting sick back to back.
Yeah.
So I was worried. I was worried that all of the preparation I had done for that whole year was going to be wiped away in 2 weeks. But I was wrong. My body did not feel the past 2 weeks. If anything, it was a good recovery period, minus the sickness part, right? The food poisoning, whatever that was. It was a good recovery period for my body to just take a break from the physical exertion I was usually putting it through.
I think ideally that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, you're training for something. You don't want to feel beat up going in. You don't want to be pushing yourself so hard right before.
Well, you know what? Next year, I'll have to look into that. Because, I mean, last year before the sack, I worked out the day before.
That's what you do.
I know.
But I think that giving yourself a rest, whether it's a week, I don't know if 2 weeks is necessary, but even a week of just taking time off, resting, and giving your muscles some recovery if you've been pushing up, leading up to that. So I think that was probably a good thing that you got sick because it forced you to take a break.
Yeah. Well, every year, I want to learn something of how we could do better. So next year, we're going to do it again. Right? I will probably do this competition until we win. And then I won't feel like we need to do it anymore. But, you know, until that goal is reached, until I win, I want to keep doing it.
Like, how did Fred feel about it? He was happy with your placement?
Fred was happy with our placement, and he knows that we pushed really hard. We both talked about it. Like, could we have done anything else? And the answer is no, we couldn't. We might have been able to move faster, but how much faster? I don't think we'd have been able to complete Mission 3, even if it was 70 degrees out.
No.
We just couldn't move as fast as we needed to complete all the missions and all of the challenges. So we did good. I know we had talked like, oh, probably we should have done the burpees. And I'm like, when could we have done that? You know, like... Oh, we probably should have taken a ride in the truck.
You had 2 minutes to write up your last...
the after action.
Yeah, you had 2 minutes to write that up real quick. So you guys used up every minute that you had.
We did. Every single minute of that competition was used to compete. And there's not a checkpoint that we could have gotten. We would have lost time somewhere. And that's the point. That's the key. We didn't have time. So... Anyways, I had a great time.
It was fun watching.
I'm glad you got to come out and watch me and Fred go through the suck and watch everybody else go through the suck.
Yeah.
And just get a perspective of what this is. And you know what's cool is you saw it run and you're not opposed to doing it. You know, you're not like, fuck that, I ain't doing that. Like, you're
there
like,
were times where I said that. Somebody would ask me, I was like, fuck no. But...
You know, I think it'll be cool.
I like things that challenge you.
It'll be a cool experience.
I like to be challenged. I like to be, to work hard towards a goal.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sitting in the passenger seat with me talking about this weekend. I had an awesome time. Glad you got to see it all. I look forward to next year. And I look forward to seeing how your training develops and how you start to tweak things that you do so that you can be competitive next year and see how it goes. We'll have to follow up with you later in the year and see how things are rolling. But until then, appreciate all of you guys listening. Very humbled in the following that we have for this podcast. People reaching out to me saying, why the fuck haven't I recorded a podcast?
People are asking me and I was like, I don't know.
I am truly humbled. And I am proud to have a podcast that everybody enjoys listening to. So I hope everybody enjoyed the one we released a couple days ago. If this one was not your flavor, because talking about a competition that you have no interest in, I apologize. This week, I'll get another one out. Until then, fellas and ladies, thank you for being a loyal listener. And until next time, see you.
Bye.